Welcome to session number 15 of our seminar entitled Christian Decision Making. In this session, we intend to cover another important biblical guideline for making good and right decisions, namely number 17, or Q, it is possible to twist God's arm. What? You got to be kidding. Is that possible? Does God allow his arm to be twisted? Yes, he does, believe it or not. Now, the best analogy here would be of the relationship between a good father and his children. The good father knows what's best for his children. But sometimes, if the children continue to pester him about something they desperately want, the father lets his arm be twisted and gives them what they desire, maybe even to teach them a lesson. Recognize that this biblical guideline now has to do with decisions that are not in line with God's will, and thus they are bad decisions. To continue to pray and beseech the Lord about a matter that we believe is in line with God's will would not be considered twisting God's arm. In fact, the Lord said in Matthew chapter 7, verse 7, that we should continue to ask, and it would be given. Continue to seek, and we would find. And continue to knock, and the door would be open. Matthew 7, 7. Furthermore, remember the Lord gave the parable in Luke chapter 18 about the widow who continued to beseech the judge for proper legal protection and got what she wanted. I'm reading from Luke chapter 18, beginning with verse 1. Now he was telling them a parable to show that at all times they ought to pray and not to lose heart, saying, there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God and did not respect man. And there was a widow in that city, and she kept coming to him, saying, give me legal protection from my opponent. And for a while he was unwilling, but afterward he said to himself, even though I do not fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow bothers me, I will give her legal protection, lest by continually coming she wear me out. And the Lord said, hear what the unrighteous judge said. Now shall not God bring about justice for his elect, who cry to him day and night, and will he delay long over them? I tell you that he will bring about justice for them speedily. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? From Luke chapter 18, verses 1 through 8. So when we say in our biblical guideline that in decision-making it is possible to twist God's arm, we are not talking about continuing to pray urgently about matters and continuing to diligently seek God's will about matters. No, these are things that we should do. But when we say that it is possible to twist God's arm, we are talking about pestering God and even demanding God to grant our somewhat selfish decisions. Now let's look at some biblical examples. In order to save time, I'm reading from something I wrote on this subject some years ago. This essay is entitled Twisting God's Arm and can be found on our website, growingchristians.org. Quote, to twist someone's arm means to force them to do something which they are not inclined to do. This idiom is generally used when a favor is manipulated from the person whose arm is twisted. Although we don't like to admit it, we twist arms all the time. We all have our ways of sweet-talking family and friends, employers and employees, close colleagues and casual contacts. We use varying degrees of arm twisting, from delicate handling to near arm breaking. Occasionally, we may twist a person's arm unintentionally, but usually it's easy to detect a selfish motive on our part, especially when we do a little honest soul searching. Is it possible to twist God's arm? Yes. In what way? Certainly we can't twist the Lord's arm in the sense of infringing on the sovereign will of God, which has been decreed from all eternity. No. However, it is possible to selfishly force God's hand into allowing us to do or have what he knows is not best for us. Christians have been known to whine and pout and even beg the Lord like spoiled children for experiences and other things which he doesn't desire to give them. Amazingly, God sometimes grants us our wish. This does not mean, however, that God is pleased with these kinds of transactions. He knows that these requests are not in our best interests, and he also knows the undesirable consequences that will follow. But God allows his arm to be twisted when we insist that, quote, not thy will, but mine be done. Many Christians have learned the hard way what the unthankful people of Israel learned so long ago. Quote, he gave them their request, but sent leanness into their soul. Psalm 106, verse 15. A number of biblical examples of twisting God's arm are included in the Old Testament history of Israel. Since all of these cases were written for our learning, Romans 15, 4 and 1 Corinthians 10, 11, it is a good idea for us to examine them and learn the lessons before we make the same mistakes. Preventive maintenance is always better than picking up the pieces. Let us briefly consider a few of these Old Testament examples of twisting God's arm. I'm reading from Numbers chapter 11, beginning with verse 1. Now the people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. The people therefore cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died out. So the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. And the rabble who were among them had greedy desires. And also the sons of Israel wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna. Now the manna was like coriander seed, and its appearance like that of bdellium. That people would go about and gather it and grind it between two millstones or beat it in the mortar and boil it in the pot and make cakes with it, and its taste was as the taste of cakes baked with oil. And when the dew fell on the camp at night, the manna would fall with it. Now Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, each man at the doorway of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly, and Moses was displeased. So Moses said to the Lord, why hast thou been so hard on thy servant? And why have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou hast laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who conceived all this people? Was it I who brought them forth, that thou shouldest say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant to the land which thou didst swear to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give to all this people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I alone am not able to carry all this people, because it is too burdensome for me. So if thou art going to deal thus with me, please kill me at once, if I have found favor in thy sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness. The Lord therefore said to Moses, gather for me seven men from the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people and their officers, and bring them to the tent of meeting, and let them take their stand there with you. Then I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take of the Spirit who is upon you and will put him upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you shall not bear it all alone. And say to the people, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat. For you have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, oh, that someone would give us meat to eat, for we were well off in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall eat not one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wept before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? But Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 on foot. Yet thou hast said, I will give them meat in order that they may eat for a whole month. Should flocks and herds be slaughtered for them to be sufficient for them? Or should all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them to be sufficient for them? And the Lord said to Moses, is the Lord's power limited? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not. And down to verse 31. Now there went forth a wind from the Lord, and it brought quail from the sea, and let them fall beside the camp about a day's journey on this side, and a day's journey on the other side, all around the camp, and about 2 cubits deep on the surface of the ground. And the people spent all day and all night and all the next day, and gathered the quail. He who gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. While the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck the people with a very severe plague. So the name of that place was called Kibroth Hattaavah, because they buried the people who had been greedy. From Numbers chapter 11. In Numbers chapter 11, we have the account of the children of Israel complaining about the manna. They were not content with a staple food that God had miraculously provided for them. They wanted meat to eat, verse 4. Their dissatisfaction was further evidence that they had rejected the Lord, verse 20. And although God was displeased with their complaint, he told them that he would grant them their desire. In fact, he said that he would give them so much to eat that it would, quote, come out of their nostrils until they would be sick of it, verse 20. Sure enough, God provided the people with all the meat they wanted. And true to their selfish spirit, they greedily gorged themselves, verse 32. Thus, along with the overwhelming supply of meat, the hand of God's judgment came upon them, verses 33 and 34. Their ingratitude and selfish indulgence was evidence of the discontent which had caused them to twist God's arm. Arm twisting always stems from a self-centered motive. Now, before we read further in this essay, let me ask you, have you ever pestered God about some matter and the Lord gave you what you wanted until you were sick of it? Illustration. You know, more than one Christian businessman, I'm sure, has twisted God's arm by constantly asking God for a more glamorous and exciting job with more travel, for example, only to find out that when God answered his prayers, he got sick of all the travel. It doesn't take long, believe me. Be careful about what you keep asking God for. He may grant your request to the point that it comes out of your nostrils, to use biblical terminology of Numbers 11. You will certainly learn the lesson of being more content with what God has given you and not continue to twist God's arm. Back to the essay. I'm reading from Numbers chapter 32, beginning with verse 1. Now the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad had an exceedingly large number of livestock. So when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that it was indeed a place suitable for livestock, the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben came and spoke to Moses and to Eleazar the priest and to the leaders of the congregation, saying, skip down now to verse 5, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. But Moses said to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Reuben, shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? Now why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them? This is what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the sons of Israel, so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger burned in that day, and he swore, saying, none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, for they did not follow me fully, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have followed the Lord fully. So the Lord's anger burned against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. Now behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to add still more to the burning anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people. Then they came near to him and said, we will build here sheepfolds for our livestock and cities for our little ones. But we ourselves will be armed, ready to go before the sons of Israel until we have brought them to their place, while our little ones live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until every one of the sons of Israel has possessed his inheritance. for we will not have an inheritance with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side of the Jordan toward the east. So Moses said to them, if you will do this, if you will arm yourselves before the Lord for the war, and all of you armed men cross over the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven his enemies out from before him, and the land is subdued before the Lord, then afterward you shall return and be free of obligation toward the Lord and toward Israel, and this land shall be yours for a possession before the Lord. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Build yourselves cities for your little ones, and sheepfolds for your sheep, and do what you have promised. And the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben spoke to Moses, saying, your servants will do just as my Lord commands. Our little ones, our wives, our livestock, and all our cattle shall remain there in the cities of Gilead, while your servants, everyone who is armed for war, will cross over in the presence of the Lord to battle, just as my Lord says. So Moses gave command concerning them to Eleazar the priest, and to Joshua the son of Nun, and to the heads of the fathers' households of the tribes of the sons of Israel. And Moses said to them, if the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben, everyone who is armed for battle, will cross with you over the Jordan in the presence of the Lord, and the land will be subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead for a possession. But if they will not cross over with you armed, they shall have possessions among you in the land of Canaan. And the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben answered, saying, as the Lord has said to your servants, so we will do. We ourselves will cross over armed in the presence of the Lord into the land of Canaan, and the possession of our inheritance shall remain with us across the Jordan. So Moses gave to them, to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Reuben, and to the half-tribe of Joseph's son Manasseh, the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and the kingdom of Og, the king of Bashan, the land with its cities and their territories, the cities of the surrounding land. From Numbers chapter 32. In Numbers chapter 32, we read that 2.5 tribes of Israel did not want to go into the land of promise that God had provided for his people. Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh decided that the land on the east side of the Jordan River was more to their liking, and they entreated Moses, quote, do not make us cross the Jordan. Numbers 32, verse 5. Moses explained to them that this selfish request was not only discouraging to the other tribes, verse 7, but also added fuel to the burning anger of the Lord, verse 14. At this point, the 2.5 tribes bargained with Moses and promised that in return for their petition, they would fight alongside the other tribes until the land of Canaan was conquered, and only then return to live on the wrong side of the Jordan, verses 16 through 19. While this arrangement was not God's original intention for the 2.5 tribes, he told them that they could do what they wanted, verse 31. However, bad fallout was sure to follow this arm twisting. It occurred almost immediately, as well as years later. In Joshua chapter 22, soon after the land was conquered, a misunderstanding between the 2.5 tribes and the rest of Israel almost resulted in civil war. Joshua chapter 22. The misunderstanding was directly related to the fact that the 2.5 tribes had been unwilling to settle in the promised land as God originally intended. Many generations later, when the Assyrian Empire attacked the nation of Israel, it was the 2.5 Transjordan tribes which were the first to be defeated and taken away into exile. See 1 Chronicles chapter 5, verse 26. Somewhere along the line, bad fallout will always follow the twisting of God's arm. End of quote. Now, before we read further, let me share another illustration where I believe I saw God answer an arm-twisting request. Some years ago, I counseled a young woman about waiting on God's choice for marriage, if the Lord wanted her to be married. This was after she told me that she was praying and praying for a husband, and God was not hearing and answering her prayers. I assured her that God was hearing her prayers, but that she needed to wait on God for God's choice. She did not like this kind of counsel. She said that her only requirement of the Lord was that her husband be a Christian, and just about anything else was okay with her, God's choice or not. That's essentially what she said. Well, I told her essentially that if she continued to pray like that, it was like twisting God's arm, and probably God would answer her prayer, but most likely it would not be God's timing and probably not God's choice. She was married within about a year, and since that time I've lost contact. But from all that I've heard, it has not been the greatest marriage. Sometimes God allows his arm to be twisted, like in the case of the 2.5 tribes, and we end up with less than what God had originally intended for us. Back to the essay for our third biblical case. I'm reading from 1 Samuel chapter 8. Beginning with verse 1. And it came about when Samuel was old that he appointed his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second, Abijah. They were judging in Beersheba. His sons, however, did not walk in his ways, but turned aside after dishonest gain, and took bribes, and perverted justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, "Behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations." But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day that I brought them up from Egypt, even to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now then, listen to their voice. However, you shall solemnly warn them and tell them of the procedure of the king who will reign over them." So Samuel spoke all the words of the Lord to the people who had asked of him a king. And he said, "This will be the procedure of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and place them for himself in his chariots and among his horsemen, and they will run before his chariots. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and of fifties, and some to do his plowing and to reap his harvest and to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will also take your daughters for perfumers and cooks and bakers, and he will take the best of your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves and give them to his servants. And he will take a tenth of your seed of your vineyards and give to his officers and to his servants. He will also take your male servants and your female servants and your best young men and your donkeys and use them for his work. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his servants. Then you will cry out in that day because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves. But the Lord will not answer you in that day." Nevertheless, the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel, and they said, "No, there shall be a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." Now, after Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them in the Lord's hearing. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Listen to their voice and appoint them a king." So Samuel said to the men of Israel, "Go every man to his city." From 1 Samuel chapter 8. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, we learn that Israel wanted to be like the surrounding nations. They wanted to have a king for themselves. The prophet Samuel was displeased with this request because he knew that this was not God's will for Israel. Verse 6, God intended Israel to be a theocracy, and as such, he would directly rule his people. But the people pressed for a king, and the Lord told Samuel to, quote, "Listen to the voice of the people." Verse 7. God allowed his arm to be twisted and let Israel have their desired king. The Lord's comment to Samuel was that the people, quote, "have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them." Verse 7. Many chapters of Holy Scripture record the sad repercussions of Israel's covetous request for a king so that they could be like other nations. From heavy taxation to evil leadership, Israel reaped what they had sown. Galatians 6, 7. Although we sometimes get our own way, twisting God's arm never results in the full blessing of God. Once again, before we read further in this essay, let me give another application and illustration. Just as Israel, at the time of the prophet Samuel, wanted to be like the other nations, so today, many churches want to be like other churches. This may not be God's will. To constantly ask the Lord to make your church like other churches may be twisting God's arm. Every church is unique to some degree, as to where it is located, as to the folks in the congregation, and as to the needs of the members and the surrounding community. I've seen more than one church fold because, from my perspective, they wanted to be like other churches. And they twisted God's arm in this respect, even down to the same kind of praise bands and drama teams. They wanted to be like other churches. On the other hand, I've seen a number of churches, including new churches, thrive and grow because they didn't twist God's arm to be like other churches. And at the same time, they didn't twist God's arm to stay the same with no changes. No, they stayed open to what God wanted and were flexible when it came to meeting changing situations and changing needs. Back to the essay for our fourth biblical example. I'm reading from 2 Kings chapter 20, beginning with verse 1. In those days, Hezekiah became mortally ill. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, came to him and said to him, "Thus says the Lord, set your house in order, for you shall die and not live." Then he turned his face to the wall and prayed to the Lord, saying, "Remember now, O Lord, I beseech thee, how I have walked before thee in truth and with a whole heart, and have done what is good in thy sight." And Hezekiah wept bitterly. And it came about before Isaiah had gone out of the middle court that the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "Return and say to Hezekiah, the leader of my people, thus says the Lord, the God of your father David, I have heard your prayer. I have seen your tears. Behold, I will heal you. On the third day, you shall go up to the house of the Lord. And I will add 15 years to your life. And I will deliver you and this city from the hand of the king of Assyria. And I will defend this city for my own sake and for my servant David's sake." Then Isaiah said, "Take a cake of figs," and they took, and they laid it on the boil, and he recovered. Now Hezekiah said to Isaiah, "What will be the sign that the Lord will heal me, that I shall go up to the house of the Lord the third day?" And Isaiah said, "This shall be the sign to you from the Lord, that the Lord will do the thing that he has spoken. Shall the shadow go forward 10 steps or go back 10 steps? So Hezekiah answered, "It is easy for the shadow to decline 10 steps. No, but let the shadow turn backward 10 steps. And Isaiah the prophet cried to the Lord, and he brought the shadow on the stairway back 10 steps by which it had gone down on the stairway of Ahaz. From 2 Kings chapter 20, verses 1 through 11. The petition of King Hezekiah in 2 Kings chapter 20 is another classic case of twisting God's arm. Because it comes so close to home for most of us, it's well worth a few paragraphs of discussion and application. Hezekiah was one of the good kings of Judah. He banned the idolatry that had crept into the nation, and he brought about many reforms in the land. Read 2 Kings chapter 18. He exhibited great trust in the Lord in the face of overwhelming odds when Jerusalem was threatened by the invading Assyrians. As a result, he witnessed one of the great miracles of the Old Testament. In one night, 185,000 Assyrian troops were struck down by the angel of the Lord as God honored the trust of Hezekiah and delivered Jerusalem. Read the rest of 2 Kings chapter 18 and chapter 19. In this connection, the city of Jerusalem never was taken over by the Assyrian Empire, and a primary reason was the great faith of good King Hezekiah. Thus, it is with some disappointment when we come to the events in 2 Kings chapter 20, About the time of Jerusalem's miraculous deliverance, Hezekiah became mortally ill. The prophet Isaiah came to Hezekiah with a message from the Lord. Quote, "Set your house in order, or you shall die and not live." Verse 1. But Hezekiah was unwilling to accept God's timing and begged God for a longer life. The scripture says that he was bitter. Bitterness is always an indication that our attitude towards God is not the greatest. King Hezekiah began to bargain with God on the basis of his life of faith and good behavior. Quote, "I have walked before thee in truth and with a whole heart and have done what is good in thy sight." Verse 3. Once again, we see that God allowed his arm to be twisted. The Lord promised to heal Hezekiah and add 15 more years to his life. Hezekiah was even able to, quote, force God to give him a miraculous sign. Now, exactly how God caused the reading of the sundial to reverse itself, we don't know. But we do know that such a request was not a sign of a strong faith on the part of Hezekiah. God had stated categorically that he would both heal Hezekiah and lengthen his life. Yet Hezekiah still demanded a sign. It reminds us of the weak faith of Gideon, who years before had, quote, put out the fleece. Weak faith and arm twisting generally go hand in hand. When we look at the writing of King Hezekiah recorded in Isaiah chapter 38, verses 9 through 22, we are at first impressed with the sincerity and logic of his request for restoration to life and health. Hezekiah was certainly not breaking God's arm with a materialistic or worldly demand. According to his prayer, he only wanted to live longer in order to serve the Lord. And yet the emphasis of his prayer on his own desire for longer life and earthly welfare, apart from an acknowledgement of, quote, "if God wills," might be an indication of his reluctance to submit to the perfect will of God. Obviously, for us to pray to the Lord for health and healing is not wrong, as long as it is with the attitude of, quote, "if it be thy will." But there is a time to die. Ecclesiastes 3:2. Suppose God's time to die has come, whether it be in old age, in the prime of life, or earlier in life. As God reveals his will to us on this matter, generally by continued sickness with no healing or recovery, there comes a point when further prayer may constitute arm twisting. Being angry or bitter with God may be an indication that we've passed that point. To continue to desperately request or demand that God preserve a life, either our own or someone else's, that God intends to take, is a selfish request in the final analysis. Just because God may finally answer our demanding prayers and do it our way by preserving a life does not mean that this is his perfect will. In fact, we may be guilty of the sin of twisting God's arm. Twisting God's arm means that we are willing to settle for God's permissive will, but we are unwilling to submit to God's perfect will. King Hezekiah's time to die had come, but he was not willing to die. The sad consequences of Hezekiah's arm twisting are seen in the scriptures that follow the record of his recovery. His son Manasseh, who is one of the most wicked of all the kings of Israel and Judah, may have been born during this time. Hezekiah apparently reneged on his implied promise of Isaiah 38:19. To teach his son about God's faithfulness. 2 Chronicles chapter 32, verse 25, says that Hezekiah gave God, quote, "no return for the benefit he received because his heart was proud." 2 Chronicles 23, verse 25. We can be thankful that Hezekiah later renounced his pride, as we see in 2 Chronicles chapter 32, verse 26. But the lack of training in Manasseh's critical young years resulted in a king that, quote, "misled Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to do more evil than all the nations whom God destroyed before the sons of Israel." 2 Chronicles chapter 33, verse 9. The fact that Manasseh humbled himself before God near the end of his reign, as we learn in 2 Chronicles chapter 33, is a lesson in God's marvelous grace. However, the fact remains that one of the reasons for the years of evil that Judah experienced under Manasseh was the arm twisting of King Hezekiah. Further bad fallout that followed Hezekiah's healing came as a result of his all-too-friendly reception of some envoys from Babylon. Read 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 12 through 19. In his pride, Hezekiah showed these pagan emissaries all the treasures of his kingdom. 2 Kings 20, verse 13. Undoubtedly, he showed off all the temple treasures as well. Perhaps he was trying to impress the Babylonians for the purpose of an alliance. But whatever the case, it was a foolish act, and one that was sure to make Jerusalem a more inviting target for the rising Neo-Babylonian Empire. 2 Chronicles chapter 32, verse 31, says that the visit of the Babylonian messengers was a test from God. Unfortunately, Hezekiah did not pass the test. How much better it would have been had King Hezekiah let the Babylonians observe his worship at the temple, the worship he had promised to God in Isaiah chapter 38, verse 20. The prophet Isaiah had to inform Hezekiah that the Lord was displeased and that his kingdom would eventually fall to the Babylonians and his own descendants would be taken into captivity. Even at this point, we can detect the selfish spirit in Hezekiah's response. He was relieved to know that the predicted captivity would not come in his lifetime, but in the time of his descendants. 2 Kings chapter 20, verse 19. If only Hezekiah had been willing to go along with the Lord's revealed will and not selfishly twist God's arm. End of quote. Now let me share an illustration at this point before we complete the essay. You know, one of my colleagues at Emmaus Bible College was named John Harper. We taught for a number of years together. But then the Lord allowed John to come down with cancer. We all prayed for John's healing, but the Lord, in his sovereign ways, chose not to heal John. Eventually, it came to the point when many of us sensed that it would be like twisting God's arm to continue to pray for John's healing. I remember driving home to Chicago for the weekend and thinking through what my messages should be for the following week when I was scheduled to be the chapel speaker for the week. I distinctly remember sensing the Lord's direction to prepare ministry on heaven because the Lord was taking John home to heaven. John went home to be with the Lord that weekend. The ministry was prepared. So we do pray for healing when we ourselves or our friends or our family members are sick. But we try to be sensitive to God's will and not twist God's arm and prevent the Lord from taking a loved one home to heaven if that is his will. I'm reading the last two paragraphs of our essay. Quote, we've seen in our brief study that twisting God's arm can emerge from any area of discontent. In Numbers chapter 11, it was a matter of bodily appetite and taste. The children of Israel wanted meat instead of manna. In Numbers chapter 32, it was a matter of location and material possession. The 2.5 tribes wanted land of their own choosing. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, it was a matter of human leadership and, quote, keeping up with the Joneses. Israel wanted a king so that they would be like the other nations. In 2 Kings chapter 20, it was a matter of physical life itself. Hezekiah was unwilling to accept God's time to die. It's easy to see ourselves involved in every one of these areas of discontent and arm twisting. Whether or not we verbalize our discontent in direct prayer to God does not minimize the sins of complaining and arm twisting. Let us diligently resist the natural tendency to push our requests to the stage of twisting God's arm. May we humbly follow the supreme model of our Lord himself who said, quote, not my will, but thine be done, end of quote. Now you can read this whole essay, Twisting God's Arm, on our website, growingchristians.org. In our next session, of Christian decision-making, we will cover two more important biblical guidelines for making good and right decisions.